Thank you and welcome to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is the debut and we are so pleased to be with you. This is your host, Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and I'm so honored to be with you wherever you are. I am a minister of metaphysics, a counselor, medium, and clairvoyant. You're welcome to visit our website, towardthelight.org. I am a near-death experiencer, one who's actually had physical death a few times. I was sent back to this plane in order to spread the word that life is indeed eternal and that we do live forever. Scotty is not going to beam me up until I've got my work done. So here we go. Toward the Light is a unique show focusing on near-death and other spiritually transformative experiences. Our topics include what every individual and caregiver should know about the dying process, near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences, exploring the many facets of after-death communications, experiencing the afterlife and the immortality of the soul, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, and experiencing intuition and telepathy. Until recent years, the near-death experience, NDE, was rarely documented, much less talked about. It was something one could only share with certain individuals who were already spiritually aware, open-minded, or at least receptive. If you've ever had a near-death or similar spiritually transformative experience, perhaps you too have felt isolated or alone, with no one you could turn to who could understand what you've been through, for fear of being misunderstood, judged, or even ridiculed. This has been a common theme shared by countless individuals throughout the world, including myself, who've had NDEs and similar experiences. This is primarily due to the fact that ignorance surrounding the NDE has been so prevalent, that is, until recently. My guests will include other near-death experiences, many who have written books, been on radio and television, lectured and given workshops. We'll also have physicians and scientists who have been able to validate the NDE in the scientific and medical communities, and we'll be speaking with people who, like myself, have been an active member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, IANS. Last month marked the 30th anniversary of my most significant near-death experience, where I lapsed into a coma for over 5 weeks and was clinically dead and lost my vital signs on my birthday, which was 2nd February. So now I've got 2 natal charts. However, I maintained silence about this and my other NDEs due to being grossly judged and misunderstood. It is as a result of a fellow practitioner telling me about IANS in 1997 that I realized that I wasn't alone, that there were others like me all over the world, and now I can join a community of NDEers. Thanks to IANS, this has been the result of my coming out and being able to open up about being an NDEer and even being proud of it. There is one person who has been a vital source of encouragement and support, one who's been a tremendous role model for me, and one who's given me lots of courage not only to write about NDEs and to facilitate a support and interest group, but she has also helped me to have the courage to give talks, to be on radio and television, and now have my own radio show centered on NDEs. This wonderful soul has had 3 near-death experiences. She's written a number of books on the topic, done over 26 years of research on the NDE with both child and adult experiences. She's traveled extensively, given lectures on NDEs, and now has taken all this to a new level and is focusing on children. Her latest book is entitled Beyond the Indigo Children. And this is so delightful. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. Okay, it's The New Children and the Coming of the Fifth World. My special guest is PMH Atwater. PMH, welcome!
Well, hi there.
How are you? My goodness,
it's such a joy to hear you talk and rattle on and on and on.
I'm not wondering like this, but I thought since it's the first show that I should let people know what we're all about. And I think it's quite auspicious that you are my first guest, after all, because as I said here, you've been a vital source of encouragement and support, and you've really helped me to come out, and here I am.
Well, I'm
back now.
I'm so proud of you, Juliet. This is great.
Thank you, love. And we do, golly, your book was tremendous. I just finished reading it recently, and I think I've got most of your books. And yes, this is Beyond the Indigo Children, The New Children, and The Coming of the Fifth World. And I would like to ask you, what really inspired you to write this book? What was that big oomph that made you say, I've got to write this?
Well, there were a couple of them. There wasn't just one. The first one was, as I was doing my near-death research, these, you know, two decades plus, in fact, a quarter of a century, I kept noticing that, regular children, you know, just normal everyday children, many of them were beginning to display the characteristics and after effects of a child who had gone through a near-death experience. And I thought, well, now this is very interesting. We've got children changed by the near-death experience, but we've also got children now being born that way. And they're not having near-death experiences, they're just born that way. I kept noticing this, and I kept researching this, and having sessions with the children and with their parents. And then I finally decided, I wonder if I ought to do something with this material. And I kind of alluded to this in the book I wrote about child experiencers of near-death states.
Now, that was a very significant book, and I read that, too, because it brought back so many things that I had been through as a child NDE as well as an adult NDE, and it brought everything home to me. It made so much sense to me, and it helped me understand myself better, why I'm so the way I am.
Well, I've heard ever so many parents and children and experiencers talk about that. It's called The New Children and Near-Death Experiences. And it was in Barron Company that published the book. It's been out for a couple of years now, but it's the most thorough study ever done of child experiencers of near-death states. So I got that done. You know, I sort of alluded to what else I was noticing about ordinary kids, but I really didn't pursue it, Juliet, until one day in meditation. I meditate and pray every morning. That's how I start my days. And in meditation, I got the words that it was my duty. And that's the word that was used, Juliet, duty. It was my duty to write about the new children and pass along what I had discovered. And that's why I wrote the book.
Well, that is so interesting because I feel this profound sense of duty, too. Just like I was stating, when I was sent back a few times, and every time, as you know, a lot of NDEs are given the option to either go forward and stay on the other side or to come back to the physical plane. Some people have chosen to come back. I didn't. I was wrestling. I thought, oh, no, I don't want to go back there. Oh, please, no. But I had to do so much like what you're doing, is spread the word to share about this profound truth with being on the other side, with the fact that indeed life is eternal, and that we are multi-sensory and multi-dimensional. We are living on so many dimensions simultaneously, and people really need to realize that there is so much more to us than what one may think. And when you're sharing this information about the children, I tell you, I just I couldn't put this book down. It was so tremendous. And I would really like to find out more about, okay, now here's a very important thing, because people have got this conception of indigo children. Now, you are telling us, no, this is not the case. Will you please go into that a bit more, explain more what the truth is behind these children, and especially you're talking about since 1982?
Well, that's when a flood of them began to enter. They've been entering for a long, long time, years and years and years. I think probably since about the mid-1800s or so. So they've been coming in for a long time. This is not new. But what is new is how we're labeling them. And those labels began, I guess in the 1970s, people began to use that term, but we didn't really see any huge influx of children with different characteristics until about 1982. And since then, there's just been millions upon millions upon millions of them. Now, what I want to focus on here, at least what I want to make plain, is that very few, very rarely, do any of these children have an indigo aura. So my very practical mind is saying, why are we calling them indigos? I mean, that's ridiculous. When we use terms like indigo or crystal or star seeds or cosmic or psychic or rainbow children, all these kinds of labels, all they do is box children into exclusive clubs of specialness that over time do more harm than good. And so I'm encouraging people not to use these labels, because these labels really exaggerate truth. They do not honor it. Instead, let's look at the characteristics themselves. Let's look at what these traits are, what the kids display. Let's focus on that, and then let's call them just the new kids, because they really are new. There's no other generation quite like them in history. So to call them new, in my way of thinking, is appropriate. It's also a nice neutral term.
Now, when you say there's been no other generation like them in history, are you referring to the fact of the quantity of children who are perhaps more self-realized or aware or
Well, yes, the characteristics themselves. I'm talking about the characteristics themselves. They are unusually intelligent. There's just a large number of them that are geniuses. They love music. Of course, lots of people love music. But they're very creative and intuitive. They're very clever innovators. They're natural-born entrepreneurs. They get very much into volunteering. They're groupies. Most of them are good at math. They have a strong spatial ability. And they abstract they start abstracting at very young ages. In fact, I think that's one of their most important characteristics, is even once they become verbal, which most of them is around two and a half when they get really, really verbal, they start abstracting at the same time. And that's unheard of. Let me give you a for instance. This is a little girl by the name of Michaela. She was 2.5 years old. And her mother was having a discussion with her one day, or at least talking with her. And Michaela put her hands on her hips, marched up to her mother, wiggled a finger in front of her mother's face, and said to her, and I quote, "I don't know the words for that yet." Now, what little 2.5-year-old knows that they don't know the word for that yet?
Right.
How can a 2.5-year-old think like that? That's called abstracting. She's dealing with concepts and abstracts at the age of 2.5. And that's what these kids are doing.
So again, it seems like these children really, I love the way you mention the fact that they are aware of their past lives. They are aware.
Well, many of them are.
Yeah. And that they are, you know, more aware of other planes of existence. And something that you mentioned that was very significant to me is the educational system. And I was trying to find out what you had quoted about this as far as percentages, because it's very interesting. Again, it was so much like reading about myself, but I was born in 42 instead of 82.
But that didn't make any difference.
Yeah. I mean, some of us are just that way no matter what. But what's interesting is that I could not assimilate the information that was being conveyed through the school systems.
Well, remember, Juliet, you were a near-death experiencer, a child experiencer of near-death states. You had one in adulthood, you had one in childhood. So that might be why you began to display these characteristics.
And everything in the educational system was so linear.
Right.
I can assimilate things when they're associated with music, color, imagery. And in fact, it's really odd because even though I was totally blind until the age of 5, boy, did I see visions and color like you wouldn't believe. And so it was only in later years that I actually found out, wow, I am intelligent. But it's just the way the information was conveyed didn't work. I couldn't assimilate it. And you were talking about 80% of the educational system is set up that, you know, most children are not going to be able to assimilate this kind of information. People are more intuitive, they're more creative, and these children are so wonderful. I really want, you know, it's sort of like I want to broadcast this all over the world. Well, I guess I am right now, aren't I? That, you know, what you're saying here is so significant and so important about these children, because they take information very differently than a lot of other children did.
Oh yeah, these are spatial reasoners.
Yeah.
And they have to be taught in a more spatial way. They have to be able to see and investigate the dynamics of something from all angles, inside and outside, and reason their way through it.
Exactly.
In other words, you can't have the teacher acting as a guru, barking out all these orders or explaining everything. That's not going to help at all, because that's all verbal.
Exactly.
They can't handle the verbal part. They've got to be shown and then allow them to explore what they're being shown.
I was just going to say, I've always been a show me person. Show me. Give me the images, give me the color, give me the hands-on, because just reading about something or having somebody say something to me, I'm not necessarily going to get it. And so this is really, really special, what you're saying about these children. And I tell you, I was a bit jumping up and down when I was reading this. Now, you also talk about the legends and the ages. You're talking about the fifth world. Can you get into that a little bit? Let's explain to people exactly what this is so they can understand what we're coming into and what these children have been brought into as well.
Well, I don't know that I can explain it exactly on the radio show. People would be advised to actually read it. But what I can do is lay the groundwork. And the groundwork is, if you explore the various Native American tribes, indigenous people, no matter where they are in the world, no matter what culture, if you go back through the various mystical traditions as well, you begin to come across all kinds of prophecy and tradition about the various ages. That apparently it has been known in group mind or mass mind or throughout our emerging cultures as they've come and gone. It has been known, stories about these ages that come and go, and the ages or worlds or suns, as they're called by the different cultures, these different broad sweeps of time, when they come in, we progress to a certain point, and then that particular age ends and another age begins. And according to these kinds of prophecies of the different ages of creation, the different ages of life as we know it on the earth plane, according to the various ones that you might want to research, they all talk about four of them that have come and gone, but most of them begin to describe a fifth one. And the fifth one is supposed to start about now. And when you get into the Mayan calendar, you begin then to sense and to see that even the Mayan calendar talks about the coming of the fifth world. And supposedly that is to begin on December 21, 2012. Now, it all depends on what interpretation of the Mayan calendar you study. Some of them say that the fifth world begins at the end of that time frame. In other words, on December 22nd, 2012, we begin the fifth world. Other people say, well, no, we've been in the fifth world for a while, but what actually happens on that date is that the calendar rolls over. And that the fifth world then begins to accelerate and advance, that it's actually been here for a while, but it begins to accelerate, advance, and moves into ascension. And an interesting aspect of that is when you discover all these old calendars, when they come to the end of their listing or their stories of the different worlds, those calendars don't end then, they roll over. In other words, when you get to world 1, 2, 3, 4, you don't suddenly begin again with 1, 2, 3, 4. No, when you come to the end, let's say 4, it rolls over into another 4. Well, most of them will roll over on a 5 because they go up to 5. And then they roll over to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then they begin again at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they just keep rolling over because they're cyclic. Your indigenous calendars and your old mystical calendars, none of them were linear like we know linear to be. They were all cyclic. They would all roll over. So as near as I can tell, especially through research, that's what's happening now. We're getting this acceleration of energy. We're getting this sense that everything is accelerating. Everything is moving into ascension. That is to say, it's advancing. It's leapfrogging. It's just really leaping into quantum changes and phases of evolution that we've been kind of predicting for a while, but didn't realize that it was all going to begin like about now. And that's exactly what's happening. It's beginning about now. And then you add into this reality of changing ages, whether we're moving into the fifth world or an accelerated version of the fifth world, you sort of add to that the tradition of root races or life waves or life rays. They're called different things by different cultures and by different traditions, but it's the idea really of root races. A root race is our genetic, it's our gene pool. It's our genetics. And, there's lots of stories, lots of traditions that say that God's plan is for there to be 7 root races that develop throughout time on the earth plane. This then would allow the human being to advance and grow and learn up to the point where they finally evolve enough that they can go back to the God from whence they came. So that's just sort of like a brief idea of how these steps or these phases or these root races move, but it takes thousands and thousands of years for the root races to come and go. And if you go through your research once again, even if you just review all of these different traditions and prophecies, you come to realize that, whoops, here we are moving into to the fifth world, and whoops, it's the fifth root race that's moving into the fifth world. And it's the fifth root race that fabled quantum leap in evolution is occurring. We're making this giant step in evolutionary growth. And it's all happening together. And in fact, if you really look at what's all happening together, you find out that, my goodness, there's a lot happening now. And it all corresponds. It all matches. It's not different and weird and somebody made it up and this is somebody's imagination. But if you really look at the research, you find out that it's all happening at the same time. You've got all kinds of fives happening. Just incredible amounts of fives occurring. I really encourage your readers to get on my website, which is www.pmhatwater.com. In other words, it's my name.com, which is pmhatwater. And the first thing on the home page is a little spiel about Beyond the Indigo Children, my latest book. But over on the right-hand side, you'll see where you can click on to Beyond the Indigo Children Extras. That extras is an addendum to the book. It contains in it those scientific papers, those discoveries, the latest, on this whole issue that came out after the book was published. So it's my way of keeping people updated. And I've got a listing in there on all the many different fives and the latest research on gene mutations, the latest research on schooling and what they've recently found, which is kind of scary, really. Yes. Just a whole lot of stuff is in there.
You've done tremendous work, and in fact, I was thinking as I've read your books, you've been very generous with providing these tables and illustrations and photographs and chronologies. Like, for example, I'm looking on page 26 right now, the five, how do you pronounce this?
Cosmologies?
Cosmological. I can't pronounce it. It's written in a way that I can't pronounce.
I don't have the book in front of me, so.
Ethics of the Mayan calendar, and it's just brilliant what you've done. And I think that as people read about this, research it, listen to people like you and myself and a host of others who have come forward with lots of information, the one thing that I like to encourage people to do is to trust their own inner wisdom. You'll resonate when the truth is really speaking to you. And another thing, I really, really like your term rollover, because that's what I think of when we cross over. We're not dying.
We're rolling over.
You know, we roll over into a new form, a new paradigm of being, and it's so wonderful. And it really also is apparent that these children seem to be pretty fearless. They're just go get 'em, you know, get out of my way. I've got something to say. I've got something to do. And what's really delightful is even I myself have developed more courage really in recent years, because I used to be very, very timid as a child, and the only way that I could come out was by drawing and painting and playing the piano and singing. I wasn't shy to sing, but otherwise I was really, really timid. because of the fact that I've always been a mystic, I've always been living interdimensionally, I've always been aware of the invisible friends that are not make-believe, and I'm so pleased that you and others have pointed this out, that these children are in touch with real beings, some of whom they probably were very much connected with in a recent incarnation that they remember and that sort of thing. So I think it's really important that we do point out that we need to listen more to what children are saying, to encourage them, to not shut them up and say, oh, that's just make-believe, that isn't real. That's such a load of rubbish. And I'm so grateful that you have been making these very strong pointers in your book. And again, yes, your website is pmhatwater.com, and I encourage anyone to visit that website. Now, can they order your books through your website, or is that...
No, I would suggest they get it through Amazon.com. I think that's about the easiest way to go. Or they can get it through Inner Traditions. I would imagine it would be www.innertraditions.com. I'm not sure. But that's, Baron Company is an imprint of Inner Traditions.
Okay.
And that's the publisher of both of those two books, The New Children and Near-Death Experiences and Beyond the Indigo Children. So they publish both of those. And, you can just go to them directly or go through Amazon.com or any of your favorite bookstores. You can just go to them and order the book if they don't have it, on their shelves. And one nice thing about going to a bookstore and asking for the book, that alerts the bookstore to interest in the book so that they will stock it.
Well, one thing I'm very pleased to say is I do have copies of your wonderful encyclopedia, as I call it, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Near-Death Experiences. So if people are interested in buying that book, it is a tremendous must-have page-turner. And again, it's called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Near-Death Experiences by PMH Atwater. And it is out of print at this point, so this is going to be a treasure. And my website, again, is towardthelight.org, so you can order that book on my website. Now, tell me, you are planning to do a revised edition of that book, am I correct?
Yes, yes, I am. And I've got all the information I need to do it. And what I don't have yet is the time, but I do want to get started. I have... the proposal for the book is already floating around looking for a publisher. When I said I didn't have time, I want to share with you something that very peculiar that just happened to me. In fact, it happened on February the 22nd in the morning. So that's not very long ago. That's just a few weeks ago. Mm. And as I said, I pray and meditate every morning. And I'm not one of these people that decides to do a book. I always go to prayer and meditation first, and I get my inspiration and my direction from that source. I do not get it from the left brain or the right brain hemisphere. I get it instead from that very different vibration that we get in prayer and meditation. And this one particular morning, I was in prayer, and I heard this voice say that it is now time for me to go back and bring together all of the many different bits and pieces of my own story, my own three near-death experiences, and put them together in one book, and to do it quickly. And when I came out of that state, I mean, I didn't know whether to laugh or be frightened, because this is a very scary thing. You know, in all my books, I do have bits and pieces of my three near-death experiences. I just put them in there as examples or to illustrate something. There is no book that has just my experience in it. And I tried once to write a memoir, and that didn't go anywhere, so I sort of cast that to one side and haven't thought any more about anything like that. And because I have bits and pieces spread out here and there, it's like, why bother? You know, who'd want to read something like that? But, you know, that's what I got in prayer and meditation. So I've been very busy unifying that which has been divided and bringing it together. It's not going to be that big of a book, but it's going to have my three near-death experiences, the revelations that were given to me, the drawings that I made of what I saw in my third near-death experience, and, you know, little things like that. And I'll just, you know, give it to my agent and say, here.
Take it and run.
Take it and do something with it. I mean, I don't know why I'm doing this, but here it is. So that's a little, I call it my interlude.
Well,
this is a time of interlude.
Well, I remember when we were in Manhattan and we were talking and you were telling us about when you were first told that you, and correct me if I'm not remembering this properly, that you needed to write three books. And that put you in a bit of overwhelm too, but you knew that you had something to do and Spirit just provided the way for you. And this is what's so nice, because you do and you have done this according to the dictates of your soul and of Spirit. And there's just everything that you've done has been so tremendous. And if I were a university professor, I would say this is a must read, all of this, because, and again, it's really interesting the fact that people like yourself and me and really, as it turns out, countless others have been told, you've got to go back, you've got a message to convey, do it.
Well, in my own case, my coming back and the task I was to perform when I came back was very specific. I mean, extremely specific. I wasn't just told I had a job to do. I was told what that job was.
Yes.
And I was shown what that job was. And it was research. You know, it wasn't just telling people stories. It was solid research. And so I used as my protocol police investigative techniques, because I'm a cop's kid. I was raised in a police station, and my dad started teaching me police investigative techniques at the age of 9. So if you can believe that, but he really did. And that's how I grew up. And so that's what I used. And now today, over a quarter of a century later, many of my findings are being verified in clinical prospective studies. One of my major findings was in the Lancet Medical Journal as part of that famous Dutch study by Pim van Lommel and his associates. The best and most thorough, and largest study yet done on the near-death experience.
Oh, he's wonderful.
And I'm part of that study. And some of my work was verified, and I'm in the Lancet, you know. To wind up in the Lancet Medical Journal for someone like me, that's like winning an Oscar.
Oh.
You know? And it happened just before Christmas, so I told everybody I got an Oscar for Christmas that year. And that's what it was. But, you know, there's 7 books out now on my findings. My work has just been research. I mean, it's been solid research, because you – It's like you can't really get material like this into the public venue until you have good, solid underpinnings. Until you can get it in the system, you really don't have something that lasts, something that's trusted, something that really makes it through the public venue as it ought to. So I stuck with that, and it was hard to do, but I stuck with it. And of course, lots of opposition, but I stuck with it. and did the work with both adults and children, and now my research base is nearly 4,000 people.
Wow.
And not just experiencers, but also above and beyond that number, getting into homes whenever I could and having sessions with significant others, not just with the experiencer. Because you've got to have it well grounded.
Yes. Yes.
You can't just go by what the person says. And so that's what I've done, and I've done it quite passionately and intently. And so now all of a sudden here to my mind, this is just like more than crazy. It's like all of a sudden in the middle of working on more research, I get this guidance to go back and take my own experience and put it into one book. Not as a memoir, but just my experience and, you know, a little bit about it, but my experience. And so that's what I'm doing, and I've got it over half done, and I keep looking at that and saying, what am I doing this for? You know, I don't have any plans. I don't have any idea of what I'm trying to accomplish or who I'm trying to reach. I just know I've been guided to do this, so I'm doing it.
Well, one thing that is very interesting that I've been noting is that since I've had my coming out, as it were, I'm just proclaiming to the world, yes, I'm a near-death experiencer. Yes, I'm a mystic. Yes, I've been through all of these very profound experiences and revelations for many, many, many years. And the interesting thing with doing this work, talking to people, reading, studying, it has actually helped me, even at this point, still assimilating my NDEs and getting a deeper understanding of the messages that were conveyed to me through my NDEs. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is also helping you. When you write this book, when you're getting this material together, even though you're familiar with your experiences, you've matured through them. And I think that the information that you can convey is going to be very, very powerful as a result, if I'm making any sense here.
Well, perhaps, but what I'm beginning to feel is that part of what I put on a shelf, and I had to put it on a shelf and not pay any attention to it, or it would bias my research. So this part of me that I put on a shelf and sort of tucked away is sort of been crying to get back out again. And I haven't paid any attention to it all these years because I didn't dare. You know, you just can't allow that kind of personal experience to intrude upon your work. Again, because of the specter of bias. So I've kept it tucked away, and it's almost as if it just doesn't want to be tucked away anymore. And it wants to come out, and I'm feeling that it's scary, yes, but also kind of like a sense of relief that I'm beginning to let light into an area of my own being that I haven't allowed light to enter before. So it's kind of nice to get back there and pull it out and sort of nurture it and hold it and cuddle it and hold it dear and say, yeah, this is okay. And maybe it's part of doing what I did with the children and the book, you know, Beyond the Indigo Children, The New Children and the Coming of the Fifth World. It's sort of like a part of that. As we enter the fifth world and the fifth root race rises in numbers, and it's, again, millions and millions of people around the world, just huge amounts of people. Then part of this rising, part of this acceleration, part of this entry of this new energy across our world, part of that for me is also releasing what's in me that I can join with the rest of this energy that is rising. So there's that sort of double connection that's going on inside of me.
Well, I feel that it is so liberating because as I was reading your book and thinking about these children, I thought, you know, we can all come out, we can all celebrate because we are fast becoming the norm rather than the odd duck, you know, in the corner being considered a freak or what have you. And like, for example, myself, I never said a word. I never even knew the word near-death experience. And I'm trying to think when I first heard that, because I found out about IAMS in 1997. Someone told me about it, and I said, oh, my gosh, you know, there's an organization. And, of course, I joined straight away. Well, it wasn't really, I mean, even at that point, I still didn't come out. So it wasn't until after millennium.
Well, my goodness, you're new and fresh on the block.
I really am. I really am. You know, it took all of this time to just come out there. And now I've been on the TV news here in Nashville, Tennessee, and you know, something I never would have imagined happening. And I'm very timid of all of this stuff. But I, too, like you, am being pushed. I'm being compelled. You've got to do this. You've got to share this information with people because it's so vital and it's so real. And it's going to change the way that people approach education. I really want to see that done. And hopefully we can spare a lot of people from being hurt and misunderstood and ridiculed and all of that stuff. I would like to see people spared of what I went through.
Right.
For the majority of my life.
The children themselves, but also the parents.
Oh,
so that they can realize what they've got here and the options they have, the alternatives they have, the different ways they can approach raising their children in a way that is more life-affirming, that helps them, the kids, and helps the parents as well. That we can do this in a way that's really positive, that's a win-win situation all the way around. And it's going to take, Juliet, it's going to take a lot of honesty to do that. It's going to take a lot of courage to do that. It's going to take a lot of willingness to embrace new ways of thinking. And just look at what's happening in the world today. People don't want to embrace new ways of thinking. You know, we want to do everything. Parts of the world wants to do everything as the way it was done in medieval times.
Oh, I know.
They don't want to update at all. They don't want progress. Well, you know, progress is tinged with both the good and the not so good. So I can see their point of view to a point. But you can't really stop the march of learning and growth and progress. That's part of our free will. That's our birthright. That's our guarantee by the very fact that we are alive, we're wearing bodies, and that we're living in the earth plane. Our birthright, by birth, is the right to choose, the right to learn, the right to grow. We have free will. And no one and nothing can prevent that without eventually falling by the wayside. So we're seeing a lot of shifting. We're also seeing a lot of sifting of people and ideas and belief systems. And what I hope to do with my work is give people perspective, give people the kind of information that has been validated, that has been verified, that, you know, I don't want to do their thinking for them. I give them the information and how it can be used And the rest is up to them. It's their choices.
Well, you've done a wonderful job of giving people lots of food for thought, and you've been very clear about what you've shared in your books, and I'm just so pleased. I mean, as I said, I've got most of your books, and I just can't put them down. You know, they've been such a source of comfort and validation for me. And another thing that has been very special to me is the fact that you're not only a researcher, but you are an experiencer. And there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, I come from both ends here.
And you're doing such a tremendous job. I've really, truly been inspired by everything that you've done. And, you know, it's...
Well, that's really, really great. I'm glad to hear that. But let's just keep saying over and over and over again, please get the book Beyond the Indigo Children, not because of I wrote it, but because of what's in it. These new kids need help. They really do. They have problems just like anybody else has problems. They're wonderful kids. They're incredible kids. They're very intelligent. They're very creative. They're very innovative. But they have problems, and one of their big problems is anger. And I have a whole chapter in the book about this very peculiar kind of anger that they have. It's an energy signature to their generation, and that kind of anger is a frustrating impatience with anything that's exaggerated or inauthentic or a lie. They can't handle that stuff.
That hit home for me in such a huge way, because that actually described me, and I said, whoa, because I'm a very gentle and kind person, but I will not tolerate deceit, phoniness, hype, exaggeration, all of those things. I said, oh, for goodness sake.
Yep.
It's just, oh, and I will get, I'm sort of like a bird flailing in the cage. When something like that starts coming my way, I just go, whoa, get away from me. This is nonsense. This is rubbish. And so I'm just so pleased that you have shared this. And again, yes, please, everyone, no matter where you are, check out Beyond the Indigo Children, the New Children, and the Coming of the Fifth World. And again, PMH's website is pmhatwater.com. We've just got a couple of minutes left here, and I'm so grateful that you have been with us tonight. And share with us any more news that you would like to before we have to sign off this evening, PMH. Any good news, anything that is coming up for you, any lectures you're going to be giving?
Well, all the lectures and everything are on my website in the section called Appearance Schedules. I think the best news anyone can hear is that now, right now, is the time for all of us to know more about ourselves, for all of us to be willing to surrender into that greater truth within ourselves, and to be led by that truth. It's just simply time to open up and to allow ourselves to learn more, to know more, to grow more, to not be held down by a dogma, by standards that no longer work, by the kind of teachings that are now being proved false. We've just got to stay true to that truth, but to be willing to double check, to make sure we're not kidding ourselves, that what's true really is true. And
it's so important
and
to think outside of the box.
Yeah, be honest here.
Yes, yes. And to allow ourselves to listen to spirit speaking within our soul, not what we have been conditioned to believe, but to really listen to the love that is guiding us from within, because it is there no matter what.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is an exciting time.
Yes, it is.
Exciting time. P. PMH, thank you so much for being my first guest on this wonderful show. It's been so lovely speaking with you again. And again, her website is pmhatwater.com. Blessings to everyone. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, love.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.